extra.
Sales red meat. That's what it is. Red meat that you can take out into the street 1 minute after you hear it and turn it into money.
In a New York minute?
No, actually, Jenny, in a Jersey minute. And today's Sell or Die Extra is brought to you by...
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? It's Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales slap in the a sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true seller diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die. Glad to welcome our friend Jared Rubio. Okay, so what would you tell someone who's hesitant to take that leap of faith to really dive into their side hustle?
Oh, I love it. I love it. So I would say once you feel the freedom and the opportunity, like there's no person going to push you or listen to any motivational speaker that's going to tell you everything you want to hear to say, okay, I'm going to wake up tomorrow, I'm going to quit my job, or I'm going to start this business.
Right.
What I tell everybody is be thought out of what you do. Mm-hmm. Don't say, oh, I see this person making a ton of money in this business, I'm going to do that. Okay, where are you going to start? Where's the capital?
Right.
What are you doing for money outside of that? For me, it's all about security. So get a full-time job that allows you to spend time after work to put in for your own business. Don't expect to work 40 hours a week and to make a serious killing. Because anybody that I know that kills it did not start just making 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
So I would tell somebody to be thought out about it, because for me, it wasn't like I'm starting this tomorrow. I kind of fell into it. But then I came to realize all the things that you need, the pieces of the puzzle.
Right.
And if you don't have that drive and that motivation – 40 hours a week can make most people tired, but for me, I'm kind of in the mindset that if I only work 4 hours a week, I'm missing something. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I've done enough in my week.
There's something you're leaving out, though. There's something he's leaving out.
Okay.
He loves it.
Yeah.
I like being my own boss.
You can feel the passion. Yeah. I hope you can hear it through the mic. You can totally feel the passion of you talking about it. So how many hours approximately do you work on your side thing?
I don't, you know, I never equate it, but I do it by the motorcycle. So with my business, last year I bought about 20 motorcycles. So when I equate to the process of buying the bike, doing the research to find it, buy it, bring it home, take it apart, clean the parts, take the pictures, make the eBay listings, and ship all the parts, all said and done, each motorcycle can range from 30 to 50 hours of work.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, you know, and what, 50 hours times 20, you know, like 1,000 hours in a year, maybe. But, you know, it's so up and down that I just equate it to my system.
Do you take apart Harley Davidsons?
That's one. I do not do American motorcycles, and there's a reason for that.
Which is?
So Harley-Davidsons are a very saturated market where Harley-Davidson made the Sportster, for example, one model. They made the same bike for over 20 years. The parts didn't change. So when I, Joe Smith over here, want to customize my bike and then I have all these factory parts laying around, so does a million other people.
Right.
And they're trying to sell them, and somebody's selling something for $20 and that same part for $100. So who do you buy from? Somebody doesn't care. They'll just sell for cheap. So my market is a very small – I like to call myself a boutique motorcycle parts dealer, because I only sell newer stuff and Japanese bikes mainly. but it's a very small range of years. So Honda, Yamaha, Suzuki, Kawasaki, Ducati, and BMW are basically the only brands I mess with, but then only specific models in that group. So it's very small regardless. Yeah. But I cater to people that are, you know, motorcycle racers, people that are just everyday riders that might crash their bike and need to replace their parts. And I'm 50% or more less than a dealer.
Wow.
Or there's people that I've catered to race teams that put motorcycle engines in race cars. So it's really cool. I've had some opportunity to work with some crazy people that put these motorcycle engines in race cars all over the world because I ship worldwide.
Wow.
So it's pretty crazy. There's like off-road race cars. There's Formula One looking cars. There's dirt track cars. There's so many endless applications for it that can really be beneficial if you know what you're doing. And part of that is being an expert in logistics because somebody says, how do you ship an engine to China? Well, it's not that straightforward. You don't just
put it in a fucking box, don't you?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope.
You have to crate it. Don't you have to crate it?
Crate it, yep. And it's got to go freight and it's, you know, the freight class. There's all this stuff, logistics. Yeah. It has to be drained properly and all that kind of stuff. But what's cool about that is I came across somebody who contacted me about he was building a fully custom car from the ground up. He was a young kid. And I said, what are you going to be doing with this thing? He said, well, in 2008, and I got in a really bad car accident. I'm actually paraplegic. I'm paralyzed from the waist down. And he's like 22 years old, this kid. And he said, I used to love riding my motorcycle, and I can't ride it anymore. So me and my friends, a group of engineers, are building a car from the ground up so that it was like a three-wheel car that was going to be basically open wheel. So it felt like a motorcycle, but he could sit in it and have full hand controls to drive it. And he wanted a motorcycle engine. So I ended up helping the guy out. And they're still probably building it, I'm sure. This was this past summer. But it was really cool to get to say, like, I don't get that interaction kind of with people. It's just pretty transactional, you know, how much you can give me this part for this or that. Yeah. So we got, you know, into the story part of it. And, you know, we had multiple conversations for hours on end about just everything. And I just felt responsible to say, I'm going to be the guy that supplies this engine and it's going to be quality. You know, I know I'm being straight with the guy and everything's going to work out great for him. Cause he, you know, he's a little skeptical, you know, I've never really bought from eBay before. And this, you know, it was like $4,000 for the engine kit he needed. So all said and done, I gave him a discount, helped him out and all that kind of stuff just to be, you know, kind of be personable with the guy about it, you know? And I take that story with me because it's pretty cool to say, like, I'm part of somebody's journey to get back into a passion.
Yeah.
Right? Like something they can never physically be able to do again, but can get some enjoyment out of something that they'll be able to do with their friends.
Please welcome the great Jason Dorsey.
So you have one part of the generation doing everything they were told they were supposed to do. Right? You told us to go to school. You went to school. You told us to get a job. We got a job. You told us to show up for work. We went to work. Nobody gave us a ribbon. We didn't get a trophy. Jen showed up today and did not get anything, right?
And that's bullshit.
Well, I can't speak for you, but I can try to get you something. And then on the flip side, we have the other part of our generation that's struggling to create real-world traction. And as they split, we call one group megalennials because they have an outsized advantage. And the other group, millennials, this is where it gets really wild. And I think you'll appreciate this, Jen. So as the generation splits, for some reason, and we don't know why, we're really trying to figure it out. We have all these PhDs. What we're trying to figure out is around the age of 30, people self-identify or self-select into one part of the generation or the other part of the generation, and they can no longer relate to the other part of their own generation.
Wow.
And in fact, you'll love this. The group most offended by millennials acting entitled at work? Other millennials who do not feel entitled. Because we think the rest of them are giving us a bad reputation. And then our boss hires some entitled millennial and tells us to mentor them. We don't want to mentor them. They're terrible. Right? You
exactly.
Hired them. You mentor them. They're your kid. Okay?
You can find lots of them. I think they hang out on the streets of San Francisco and Portland, Oregon.
There we go. Get ready. Oh, watch out. He brought a marker, everybody. They it probably has a notepad too. So
I have a pad.
I he's so exciting. I mean, the guy, he can do math by hand. It's incredible. Really represents the generation well. So as we started to dig into these myths, we found that millennials were splitting into two. We found that millennials aren't tech savvy, which was a huge deal and changes how people have to sell and market to them.
Really?
Right? Yeah, they're completely not tech savvy. What they actually are is they are tech dependent. And there's a really big difference. They don't know how technology works. They just know they cannot live without it. which changes the user experience, which changes all the expectations all the way through the purchasing pathway, which changes B2B sales, everything. And so when we have to help companies think through this, it comes down to, and you'll appreciate this, how simple can you make it so it just works?
Yeah. Mm.
And so that's when we're doing all these tech strategies and speaking, we're trying to help people implement this.
I don't want to know how it works. I just want to know that it works for me and how I need it.
Yeah. And ideally.
And with, now.
And now. And the younger you go from down to millennials to Gen Z, and I'm happy to talk about all these, they actually expect it to be predictive. So they don't even want to have to select it. They want somebody else, Netflix, to tell them what they should watch next, or YouTube to recommend the video. Or if I'm going to save and hit a savings goal, these things should all be recommended, preferably happening in the background. And we did a big global study with a company called WP Engine, amazing company. And what we found out is Gen Z, who's now 23 and under, was the only group willing to give up their anonymity online in order to have a better web experience. So they basically said, I don't even want to have to make choices. I will give you more information. Isn't that ironic? Yeah. Jeffrey, look, Jeffrey's already backing away like, yeah. I don't want them to know anything about me. Oh my gosh, delete the files. And Gen Z's like, have it all. Just make it better for me, right?
Wow.
So all of these things we get to study and some of the things we found, for example, for the first time, technology trends are starting with the youngest and rippling up to the oldest. And it's always been the opposite because it used to be older and affluent would drive it down because they could afford it. Well, now everything's cheap. It's cheap mobile technology. So all of a sudden, you know, millennials use Facebook. Then who goes on Facebook? Our parents, right? And then they start looking up their old high school sweetheart.
Now it's no longer cool.
Yeah, no, they're all getting off. Like right. My mom writes in the comments, I love you. Hope you're having a great day. It's like terrible, you know? She uses commas. It totally freaks me out. And so, all these things are happening. And so when we did the research, the idea was let's separate myth from truth around millennials, this kind of conversation, mm-hmm. Gen Z and the others, and then also see how that informs sales and marketing strategies and also on the HR, the management side, the leadership side, because all these companies now have 3, 4, some of them have 5 generations, and people are not prepared to deal with it. And there's one thing you said, Jeffrey, that's really important. And you said, you know, why do we have to adapt and kind of adjust to millennials? And I think that's part of the problem. Millennials also should be adapting and adjusting to other generations. And this is particularly true in the workforce. In sales, it's not true. In sales, whoever adapts wins, right? That you got to get to the consumer.
Totally.
Right? But totally. On the employment side, millennials should come towards you because you have experience, you have wisdom, you know how to problem. There's all these things you have that we don't have. And frankly, we're all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
Millennials are not as question prone as other generations, I have found. They don't want to ask about something. They want to tell you how they feel about something or what they expect from something. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, that's the thing that pisses me off. Like, I don't want to
– One of the many things.
Well, if they ask a question, it's what's your vacation policy?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't – if you ask me about my vacation policy, what it tells me is you're going to be pissing and moaning if something happens that's not exactly right. I don't want that person here. Mm-hmm. They're a disruptor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I understand why you say that because you would probably want them to say, well, what else can I do right now to help move the company forward? And
right.
These kind of questions, which – could happen theoretically. But the idea is that when we look at these different generations, millennials do go out and they ask questions and things like that. But a lot of times they don't ask it of their boss. And in fact, the group that asks those questions is Gen X. And that's because Gen X doesn't trust anybody. So
wow.
They're the ones that are more questioning. You know, when I finish speaking, Gen X is the only group that comes up to me. You know, thousands of people in these rooms. They're all, you know, cheering, yelling, all this kind of stuff. It's amazing. I love it. And then we get off the stage and somebody in Gen X, always Gen X, you know, kind of this late 40s, early 50s will walk up and they'll say this, Jason, that was pretty good. I didn't think it would be. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see your data.
Hey, everybody, it is Motivation Monday.
Okay, so Eldo asks, What do you do when personal problems distract and demotivate the hunger?
Great question.
It is a real good question.
Yes.
Thank you for not telling us what it is.
For real. Thank you for asking that,
yeah.
Eldo.
But for me, I have personal things all the time. My kid has a hurt leg. We're going to Dr. Phil today Gabrielle asked, you mean the guy on TV? I said, no,
the other Dr. Phil.
but the bottom line is, it's a distraction. And everything that you have in your life is a distraction. And you have to compartmentalize it and just block out distractions at some point in time. Let me give you the words of the great Doug Branson.
Yes.
Go back and look at page one of our instructions this morning. Eliminate all distractions.
Yes.
Because it will take our focus off of what we're trying to do, which is convey information to our customers.
And for a lot of people, eliminating some of these personal problems is not an option. They just exist.
They persist.
Is there a way to put them on pause for a moment?
Yeah. Why don't you try writing down and journaling to yourself why you're doing this sales thing to begin with? What is your motivating factor behind it? What's your internal why? And then keep anytime one of those problems come up and taunt to distract you, why don't you think about that why and remember why you're doing this? I think that will help you.
Here's what to do. Write your problem down. Write your distractions down because they're going to recur. I don't know which the right word is there.
I think they're both work.
Okay. Yeah. But write them down and then write down what their present status is and what your thoughts are of what you can do with it. And then you can set it aside. As long as you haven't written it down, it's going to keep bugging you until it interrupts your thought process for everything else. But if you do write it down and you do write what the circumstances are about it and what you intend to do about it, now it's kind of resolved. And if you get another idea, add to the file.
And there really is something to be said about writing it down. Like, you can think about it, but you're going to be stuck in this head spiral of thoughts if you don't get it out of there. So literally remove it from your head, remove those thoughts, write them down, and then ask yourself while you're writing them down, can I affect the outcome of this distraction or problem or issue? Is there something I can do? Or does this just exist? And if you can't impact it, then stop worrying about it.
Yeah. And I'll also say that I find that having purpose and hunger and achieving things in my professional lifestyle can help me sometimes to solve personal problems. It feeds my confidence. And when I feel confident, I feel better about myself. And when I feel better about myself, I tend to have a clearer head about how to solve some of those problems. So it can honestly help, you know, sort of reverse, help to fix some of those things.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to GittimerLearningAcademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.